The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yes, still no government. We had thought, hoped, perhaps expected that Yair Lapid would go to the president yesterday. He did not. Apparently, the discussions now center on who will be members of the Judicial Selections Committee. That apparently is the level of detail that the coalition talks at right now. Some disagreements over who will be on that committee. If that's what they're arguing about, I suspect we have a government, right? Because otherwise, they would be arguing about some of the much bigger issues. I'm certainly hopeful that today that will be presented to President Rivlin. But one of the brave souls amongst those who have been nominated to the new government is Pnina Tamanu-Shatta. We've come across her, currently Minister of Immigration and Absorption, of Immigrant Absorption, I think that's the official term. She was responsible for bringing home quite a number of Ethiopian immigrants during the term in office. She herself is an immigrant from Ethiopia. And she is penciled in to be the new Minister of Education when the new government is formed. And she's come out making a very, very fascinating proposal, potentially bringing her into loggerheads with the teacher community. She's saying that this year in September, which is the first month of the new academic year, there will only be 7 school days because of the way that the holidays fall out. So why should we not just shift the summer holidays to include September? And by that she means give up on July as a summer holiday month, which is a traditional month in which schools begin their summer holidays. Let's learn during July and let's have summer holidays in August and September instead. Now, I wish her luck on that particular proposal, because I know that the teachers will turn around and say the holiday period that we get is a small reward for a very, very tough job that we do, and they will certainly fight that cause. I personally think it's a great idea, and of course I run the risk of earning the wrath of the teacher community, some of whom I know like to listen in to you, Howard, in the morning. But I think it's an interesting proposal. I doubt that they will be able to bring it to bear this year. I think it's already too late in the day. But maybe for future years, it might be an idea to think about, instead of having effectively 3 months of summer holiday, which is what will happen this year, have 2 months, but allow it to fall over the time of the Jewish holiday period. We'll see.
Look, it certainly works in other parts of the world. I think 2 months is more than enough. I think by 3. I mean, I wonder if it would incur the wrath of the teachers. Surely the teachers would be happy with 2 months and then 1 month somewhere else. You know,
I don't know that that month goes somewhere else. That's the question.
Right,
you know?
I guess.
I think it's effectively an extra month of learning rather than an extra month of holiday somewhere else. So,
But you know what they say, a bit of education never killed anyone.
Apparently not. Perhaps just the teachers.
Right. In terms of Naftali Bennett, just going back to that, when do you think, is there a deadline to this whole thing?
Yes, the deadline is midnight tonight.
Okay.
So that is the drop dead date. If by midnight tonight, Yair Lapid has not returned to President Rivlin with his government, then Yair Lapid's mandate expires and all bets are off the table. Then we will see whether Prime Minister Netanyahu really can bring his government in the way that he presented the other night, saying it's obvious that a right-wing government will be formed if Yair Lapid is unsuccessful. I suspect that we're not going to test him out. I think that Yair Lapid has probably done enough now to be able to present a government to the president. I'm not sure to what level of detail he actually needs to go when he presents the government to the president. What he needs to be able to do is say he has a government that will pass the vote of confidence, which will be held in the Knesset within the next week. I don't know that he needs to bring details of exactly how many people will make up the Judicial Selections Committee, but I suspect that there are certain parties within the coalition who will be holding their signature back pending agreements of this nature. But I suspect that we probably have enough to form a government now and hopefully enough to get through that critical vote of confidence that will be held in the Knesset once the government has been presented.
All right, and obviously we'll follow that very closely. There's also a vote taking place today for Israel's 11th president. Who are the candidates?
Well, the two remaining candidates who will be going head-to-head today are Isaac Herzog, Buzi Herzog, as he's commonly known, and Miriam Alster. Now, this is a classic case of, for the first time, no sitting members of Knesset are actually part of the presidential election. Traditionally, it's a member of Knesset who then moves on as a, some sort of a father figure, some sort of a senior person to be, take up the mostly ceremonial role as Israel's president. This time around, that's not the case. We have Buzi Herzog, currently head of the Jewish Agency, formerly head of the Israeli Labor Party, a well-known a lawyer from the Tel Aviv area, comes from a very well-entrenched family. His father before him was president of Israel. His grandfather was the chief rabbi of Israel. So he's someone who comes from a very, very well-established and well-known family. And he seems to be the obvious choice and certainly the favorite as things go into today's election. Miriam Alster, on the other hand, comes from an entirely different background. She is an everyday person who has not been involved in politics at all. She got married, lived in the Sinai Peninsula area until that was given up by Israel and her family were forced to move out. She went on to have She had two children while living in the Sinai and then went on to have another four children after that, after they moved back from the Sinai. She is a mother of soldiers who have unfortunately been killed in Israel's wars. She lost not one son, but two sons who were serving in the military,
wow.
One in the Lebanon War and one in one of the Gaza campaigns. She is an educator, a headmistress of a school, and someone who, since her tragedies, has really been well known for speaking out, for motivating people, for giving motivational speeches. She actually was born in Casablanca in Morocco, emigrated to Israel in 1963. And she has also won the Israel Prize, which is the most the greatest prize that someone could win as a citizen of Israel. She was a recipient of Israel Prize in 2018 for lifetime achievement through her work as a motivator and as an educator, taking those losses that she had to suffer and trying to use them to motivate people. She's also released a book called Shirat Miriam, tells about her story. And she's also been someone who's lit the Independence Day torch for Israel 66 Independence Day. So she's that was in 2014. So she's someone who has come from a very, very civilian background rather than a political background. And she will be competing against Buzi Herzog today for the presidential role. The way that things will work is that 11 o'clock exactly, the Knesset speaker will formally initiate the vote. The Knesset secretary will summon the members of Knesset into the plenum, where there will be a special ballot box that will be called in alphabetical order. There will be no party faction discipline. Everybody is allowed to vote according to his conscience. Nobody is required to vote according to party political lines. And then at the end of the vote, there will be four members of Knesset who formed a committee to count up the votes, and they will go to the room where the winning candidate will be waiting to announce that they are Israel's 11th president, and they will be sworn in on July the 9th when President Ruvi Rivlin's term ends. So that's the way that things will work today during the presidential vote.
It's has there ever been a president who didn't have a political background?
Not that I can recall. I'm just trying to think about Israel's very, very first presidents. I mean, I think that even in the case of Israel's first presidents, that they all came from some sort of a political background. And, you know, they had been involved in politics. I mean, even Chaim Weizmann, who we know came from a very, very scientific background, but I think he also had a political side to the work that he did. He was appointed by one of the political parties at the time. And then we went on to Yosef Sprinjak and Yitzhak Ben Tzvi, a number of names that people might not be totally familiar with. but they were all members of political parties. I didn't see one of the presidents of Israel, all the previous 10 presidents, who didn't have some sort of an affiliation to a political party. So if Miriam Elster was to be elected today, she would be the very, very first president who has no formal affiliation to any political party.
Yeah, very, very interesting. It'll be fascinating to see. Let's talk about the new head of the Mossad. He took office yesterday. Is anything likely to change under his leadership?
So this is, I think, going to be a real change in the, at least in the face of the Mossad, because David Barnea, also commonly known as Dadi, that's his the name that he goes by, Dadi Barnea, he is the new head of the Mossad. He was born in Israel. He has been involved with the Mossad for some time. He came up through the ranks of the army in combat unit. He's also done some time in business. He worked within Tehran for some time. He has a background there. He also has been educated in the United States. He has a degree from the University of Technology in New York, and he has an MBA from Pace University. So he's somebody, he was also a business manager at an investment bank in Israel. So he's had a very, very mixed career. But one of the things that really came through the event yesterday that was held to say goodbye to Yossi Cohen and to welcome Dadi Barnea as the new head of the Mossad, it was noticeable that Iran was very much on the lips of all those people at the event, including Prime Minister Netanyahu. Mm. And Dadi Barnea himself went out by saying that the long arms of the Mossad will be able to reach to Iran wherever necessary. And in spite of the current work that's going on with the United States to try somehow to re-engage with Iran, Israel may well be forced to go its own path if it can't come to some sort of an agreement with the approach that it wishes to take with regard to Iran and the nuclear program and some of the scientists who are involved in that nuclear program, who certainly left us with the feeling that the whole process of assassinations, which Israel has been linked to but never really owned up to, that program may well continue. And further cyber attacks, he spoke about a mix of operations using advanced technologies. So we interpret that to mean cyber attacks. It's interesting because, you know, now that the head of the Mossad is a public figure, once upon a time, he just used to be a letter of the alphabet. He is a public figure. We know who he is. We have pictures of him. We know more or less where he lives. We know his family. He has four children. We know that his parents were both people who escaped from Eastern Europe during the period of the Shoah to come to Israel and build a family here. So we know quite a lot about him and where he comes from. And yet, you know, some of the work that goes on within the Mossad is, of course, still very, very low key. I suspect that we're not going to see any major change to the way in which the Mossad has operated until now. I think Yossi Cohen has established a type of work which is likely to be continued by Dadi Barnea. But he will have his own style. I think he's somewhat understated. As I mentioned in a previous chat with you, he's described as quite dapper. So I think it's going to be an interesting face to the Mossad. We'll see how things progress from here.
Yeah, very, very. It is interesting how it's changed. How it used to be a, you know, this almost nondescript, or we didn't even know who it was. And now that person has become a public figure and everybody's debating about how well he dresses or not. Either way, the Bank of Israel decided to maintain Israel's interest rates 0.1%. How is the bank assessing Israel's economy at the moment?
Well, there is certainly pressure on interest rates around the world, and indeed on Israel's interest rates. We've seen already elsewhere around the world that interest rates have begun to rise. We've also seen a slight increase in inflation in Israel. Of course, the period of the COVID-19 pandemic has left the Israeli economy weakened due to the lockdowns and due to so many people having been unemployed. At one stage, the unemployment rate was around 10%. That's now reduced back to around 5%. There was also a GDP contraction in the first quarter to the extent of 6.5% at an annualized rate. So lots and lots of issues around the Israeli economy, and yet an incredibly strong economy in spite of all of that. Interest rates continue to be very, very low. There is talk about the possibility of interest rates increasing only towards the back end of next year. So for the next year to 18 months, we're expecting the interest rate to be 0.1% or thereabout. Even though inflation has increased a little, it's still within the target range that has been set by the Bank of Israel. Interestingly, the employment situation is very, very difficult to manage because still a number of people are not going back to work because they are using government benefits that have been given out for Corona. And there are so many jobs now available in the Israeli market that are not being taken up, that are open, that places are desperate to employ people, and yet there aren't people to fill those jobs. So I'm expecting that unemployment rate will go down quite substantially once those jobs get filled.
Incredible. Absolutely unbelievable. And about an hour ago, we spoke to Stats South Africa talking about the unemployment rate here. When you have these two conversations, it just is so clearly very different worlds. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8:01. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.